So let me also start out by thanking the organizers for inviting me here. I want to tell you about a few things that we've been working on for, well, the last maybe half year, 1 year, that has to do with polar molecules. And the interesting part maybe for polar molecules is that this is interesting on one side for quantum optics, but on the other side, I also believe that it's a close connection with some of the solid state ideas also that have been discussed here at this conference. Let me point out the people in this group that worked on this project are listed here, two students, two postdocs, and many of these ideas are done together with the Harvard-Yale collaboration. I visited Yale last May, and some of these ideas came up there, and we are collaborating on these things, and then we found out that actually Michal Lukin at Harvard had some extent similar ideas, so they simply joined forces. So look at this, some of these things that I talked about as being joint work between Innsbruck and also Yale and Harvard. Okay, a few introductory remarks here. When we talk about, I guess all of you are aware that on the side of atomic physics, one of these great developments that we had over the last 10 years is that people generated very cold quantum gases. And this led to a lot of experiments, generated Nobel Prizes and all of these kind of things. And you might ask, I mean, what's next? And one of the things that I can see if I go to my friend's labs is this, that cold polar molecules will be one of the systems that will be studied in the near future. And these are cold polar molecules, not like what people do at the moment in some very highly excited states. They are electronic and vibrational ground states. And these systems have certain new features, and I believe that these features are actually very, very interesting, and these features are the basis of, for example, ideas like interfacing with solid state systems. The new feature is that if I take a heteronuclear molecule, you know, a molecule, a diatomic molecule, built up of two different atoms, there will be an uneven charge distribution. As a consequence, there will be a dipole moment. And this dipole moment likes to talk in a very strong way to microwave radiation. And this opens the possibility of coupling polar molecules in a novel way that we have not seen so far in the standard Bose-Einstein-Condorcet kind of scenarios. Experiments done along these lines, I mean, these are groups listed up here. Dave DeMille is at Yale, John Doyle is at Harvard, Meyer is in Berlin, and Gerhard Brandt is in Munich, and also Junier, who is at Chile. These people are studying these things, but actually the list is becoming much longer. So this will be a hot topic, I guess, in the cold atom side a few years down the road. Now you might ask yourself, if there's a new toy, what can you do with a new toy? And of course, there's a lot of things that I can tell you on the side of atomic physics or molecular physics, one should rather call it here, like new scenarios for quantum computing called quantum gases, and I will afterwards very briefly tell you a few of these ideas. But maybe for the community here, the interest is mainly the fact that it seems that these kind of systems are providing an ideal interface between AMO physics and the mesoscopic condensed matter physics. In the past, I mean, people like myself have thought quite a lot to what extent one can somehow build interfaces between some of these mesoscopic systems and atomic systems. But usually the crux of the problem really comes down to the fact that some of these setups, when you talk about some mesoscopic environment and something on the more atomic physics side, that these setups must be compatible. And very often this is clearly not the case in terms of scaling of parameters and all of these things. And the goal really has to be that one tries to combine the best of two worlds, and in practice it quite often turns out that you combine the disadvantages of all of these worlds. On the other hand, I believe that these polar molecules are one example where these things work out. And so in this sense, I guess it is really quite unique, and this is the reason why I'm at the moment actually quite excited about these possibilities here. Let me sort of put at the moment now my hat on as an atomic physicist and tell you a few features on the side of these polar molecules. Let me kind of contrast them with kind of stuff that I've been working on over the last 10 years on these, you know, cold atoms and quantum computing ideas and you know, cold atoms and optical lattices stuff and so on. You know, systems that are close to my heart are, for example, cold atoms and optical lattices. So some time ago we proposed that if you take counterpropagating laser light, you can build kind of, you know, little arrays of microtraps that you can store atoms, as a matter of fact, many atoms, and you can declare them to be qubits, and then you can think about doing quantum computing in an optical lattice. And on the experimental side, these ideas have given rise to actually a very remarkable set of experiments. So these things do exist in the lab. One can simulate here strongly correlated Hubbard models and so on. So this is, I guess, a very exciting topic. The claim is that this thing can also be done with these polar molecules. trapped ions. Okay, some of you might know that I had interest, together with Ignacio Sirac, to come up with ideas how to implement a quantum computer based on trapped ions. Essentially, what we do in this case is that we form a Gmap crystal out of these ions, say in the 1D trap, and then we're using the photon bus mode in order to create entanglement in the controlled way between the different qubits here. You will see afterwards that these kind of things, Dinger-type crystals, they're not really Dinger crystals, will also appear on the right-hand side over here. So that's another option, but there's actually many more possibilities than in the case of trapped ions. Cavity QED is another one. And also, we've talked about atomic ensembles. There can also be molecular ensembles here. So let me now sort of go down very briefly the list of features, and I will afterwards try to make this thing a little bit more precise. On the side of atomic physics, the progress that has been made is, of course, that one is able to store single atoms, and also here we can talk about single molecules. Due to the dipole moment, there's some new possibilities for making traps. We can also talk about the molecular ensembles. They don't have to be necessarily quantum degenerate gases. There's a coupling to optical as well, and that's important, microwave fields. On the side of atoms, if you want to talk to microwave fields, you normally have to go up very high to some Rydberg states. In the case of these dipolar molecules, of course, we got some rotational excitation. We'll explain this afterwards. So we have coupling to optical as well as microwave fields. And there's a strong dipole moment, so these things are actually very strong, these kind of couplings. So you can talk about, in this sense, from this point of view, by trapping and cooling using these fields, QED. The cavity QED, spontaneous emission, for example, normally turns out, of course, this is microwave radiation to be very small, but it can be engineered by coupling this thing to a cavity, and that's very exciting, because in the case of the atom, we always have, from the excited state, spontaneous emission, and this is a decoherence source that you cannot switch off. Here you can turn these things off and on in the way that you want. And of course, this fact opens this possibility of interfacing these solid-state systems with AMO systems having strong coupling relative to the dissipation. And also, you can see we have the optics as well as microwave, so there's a possibility of converting, for example, microwave photons to optical photons and vice versa. So we have also a microwave-optical interface here. On the other hand, there's collision interactions. And one hand, they come in as being something quite bad, because, you know, if you have a gas and you have some dipolar molecules and these things collide, you might expect the defacing is actually quite strong. And it turns out, yes, there's some of these defacing rates are larger than what we know in the case of atoms. On the other hand, there's also some completely new aspect coming in that at the very end actually solves some of these problems, which is the fact that one is able to build something like a crystal, sort of, some people like to call this thing a Wigner crystal, but actually it's not Wigner. This is not Kulov, this is one of R-cube. And so, in this sense, there's a new possibility, and I would like to mention these things on the side, but I will not really talk much about the defacing ideas yet. So, I guess I should start out by telling you a few basic facts about polar molecules, sort of this kind of molecular physics that most of you probably never wanted to learn about, but I will make it very short, yeah? Okay, let's first talk about a single heteronuclear molecule. You know, this is a cartoon that we should have in mind. We have the diatomic molecule. We prepare this electron in this ground state of the electronic excitation as well as the vibrational excitation. And then you write down a very simple model, which is a rigid rotor. Okay, H is the Hamiltonian, B is some constant. We call this a rotational constant. And it then has to do with the angular momentum. This is indicated here. This thing is simply a rigid rotor. If you plot the corresponding energy levels, the first thing that I kind of like about the system is that the rotor has an unharmonic energy level. So there's a ground state, then n equals 1, 3 for the degenerate state, it goes up, but this thing is unharmonic. It's not a harmonic oscillator. So harmonic oscillators have this problem that when you try to form qubits out of these things, the harmonic oscillator part, of course, always causes a problem. Now, these excitations here are connected to the dipole moments, and these dipole moments actually can be quite large. Say something like 10 to the pi. They're not as large as in the case of Rydberg states, but I mean, they're quite appreciable. Normally on this scale, you can also see the scale for these excitations is on the order of about, say, 10 gigahertz, 20 gigahertz, and everybody who likes microwave will, of course, like this fact over here. And historically, this has been the reason why the investigations or study of these systems have been, of course, this microwave spectroscopy. And there's essentially no spontaneous emission. The lifetime of these states is something like the rate is 10 to the minus 3 hertz. And if you put in room temperature, then you find that, of course, there will be black body radiation. Then the lifetime of these things could be something like, say, 1 hertz, rate of 1 hertz. So these are very long-lived states over here. And this is very convenient. So So right away, looking at this fact, you conclude that there's a very strong coupling here to microwave fields, and of course, and also when you think about the kind of split line cavities that the Yale people have built these fantastic experiments there, you can see that this is a way, this kind of polar molecules will talk to these microwave cavities, and it's something I would like to mention then afterwards. Life is a little bit more complicated, and similar to the fact that you can talk about identifying qubits, you can sort of start with the most elementary model, and this is the one that I just talked about here before, just a rigid rotor by itself. This would be a molecule having a closed shell. This is just the anharmonic excitation that I talked about here before. But like in the case of atom, I mean, molecules, for example, if you take those that have a single electron outside of one of these closed shells, can have a structure like what's indicated here. You know, all of you know that in the case of alkaline atoms, we have things like spin orbit coupling, and so there's a similar effect here. We call this spin rotation coupling. So these excited states, we call this thing actually the Rolle coupling, will split up into something which in the case of an atom would be called fine structure. But you can see here the possibility that the spin now, so to say, is coupled to the rotation, and this gives rise to this fine structure, and we can use this afterwards actually to do quite a lot of interesting stuff. Coupling spin to rotation and then coupling this way to the dipole moment, this is an interesting possibility. And so if you talk about qubits, of course, there could be something like on the quote, the charge qubit, where you put the qubit over here. But of course, the spin qubit, like taking these degenerate ground states with the spin up and spin down, in view of the decoherence, is probably a much better idea. But these are sort of options of putting qubits into these kind of molecules. So this is a question, how to encode qubits. For some of those who know a little bit of atomic physics, you can see here that actually this excitation spectrum sort of looks to people like myself who have worked with alkaline atoms in the past, sort of like an alkaline atom, but it's sort of somehow squashed down to a gigahertz kind of frequency state. You know, in an alkaline atom, these would be optical excitations, and here what we have is excitations that are, for all to say, something like this would be 10 gigahertz, and the spinning here maybe something like 100 megahertz, say a number like that. And so as a consequence, all of these ideas that we have in atomic physics with alkaline atoms manipulating them sort of are also available here, just replace the word optics by microwave. But at the same time, we have the really big benefit that the excited states, emission from the excited states, the spontaneous emission, is essentially negligible. So many ideas from optics, from atomic physics that never worked there really because of the spontaneous emission causing large decoherence, they work in this context here. Then, of course, people like myself are in business because I know a little bit about these atomic physics, and I know these ideas that didn't work there, so the hope is to somehow recycle these ideas under new management here. Okay, remark number two is this. What I also like about these polar molecules, and this is sort of a side comment that's maybe more along atomic physics, is that, of course, these things having dipole moments, they interact very strongly with each other over some distance. Interactions, these dipole-dipole interactions are long-range interactions, one of our cube. And because the dipole moments tend to be relatively large, this can be the basis of taking polar molecules that are some distance apart and having directly relatively strong, and strong means here that in terms of temperature requirements for cooling these systems, we don't have very strong conditions here, allows you to get strong couplings over some distance. And the interesting part is, of course, long range. As I mentioned, there's an angular dependence. We can use this then at the end. We'll show you some example. We engineer very interesting spin models that should also be of interest to the community here. And the fact that this is strong is then also convenient. So these are sort of building blocks, and now you can try to play with these things and try to combine it. Now you might ask yourself, what can we do with these things? So let me sort of first go through all of these things, give you a set on a few slides of some qualitative ideas, what these things can be used for, and then we will enter in a little bit more detail. So this first part is just to summarize some of these qualitative outlines, you know, things that come to your mind, the new possibilities. We have worked out part of these things, part are still in progress and so on, so I will tell you stuff that we are essentially working on at the moment. Now, the probably interesting part here for this community is this coupling of polar molecules to this Yale-type cavity QED, where it does circuit cavity DNA. Of course, as I mentioned, the talk that was given on Tuesday. I mean, I have to say that from my point of view as an atomic physicist, I consider these experiments really to be a breakthrough because for the first time, I can really see that on the side of condensed matter physics, one is able to do here in this context cavity QED experiments to really compete you know, in a very competitive way with what we have on the side of atomic physics. Atomic physics worked very long on these things, and here comes, you know, condensed matter system, and right away is able to compete with these things. So it's quite amazing. And so you can see the cavities, and that can be very short here, because it has been explained in this talk here in Tuesday, is that one is a microwave cavity strip line cavity. I will talk about some of these numbers afterwards. And what these people that do is to couple a two-level system in the form of a Cooper bag box here. So this is standard cavity QPH. Okay, the question is now that we would like to add now here polar molecules, and we can do this in a different form, either single or maybe ensemble of polar molecules, in order to provide, instead of the qubit that you have here, the Cooper pair box, sort of a high quality quantum storage. Sort of look at this system, this is like a little quantum processor, you put in a few qubits over here, but now you would like to add single polar molecules, maybe molecular ensembles. I will make the example of molecular ensembles afterwards, because that's what we worked on. Use, so to say, a high fidelity storage to this thing. And also you sort of complement the solid state system by something which is its weakness, because the lifetime of the decoherence of the Cooper bag box is actually sort of the weak link in this whole story over here. And so we are trying to complement these things from the atomic side. So we have in this sense here Cooper bag box as a qubit, and in the following what we're going to do is this, that we're not really using this as a qubit, but we will use it as an unharmonicity to make this cavity an unharmonic cavity. Yeah? But now the idea is this, that you just take, here's an example, molecular ensembles. You can float these molecules, these polar molecules, above the surface. I will give you some numbers a little bit afterwards. And then you can store in these molecular ensembles. If I talk about ensembles, they can be modeled essentially as harmonic oscillators. So you have a harmonic oscillator coupled here to a nonlinear cavity because of the Cooper bag box, and then coupled here to the second ensemble, and the question comes up, can I do gates between these things in a deterministic way? But of course, this can not only be thought about in terms of qubit, but also in terms of the continuous variables. So this is adding high fidelity storage here, and but nonetheless keeping strong coupling here to the cavity. This is the idea. But at the same time, you can also see that if I talk about molecules, I have all of the optical access. So if I have a trap over here, I can, for example, very easily move a cloud of molecules, also single molecules, maybe some distance away. I can put these things through the cavity, and I can convert microwave photons and by storing them in this ensemble over here. Then, of course, if I couple these things to an optical cavity or just put these things in free space, into the flying qubit. So you can see this is an interface between optics, the world of optics, and the world of communication, quantum communication. And on the other hand here, all of this microwave stuff now. So this is really a hybrid processor. We have here a solid state element. We have sort of, you know, on one hand, high quality storage, and on the other hand, we have an optical interface. So this makes this package quite attractive. In particular, since all of these couplings that we have, the coherent couplings, turn out to be stronger than all of the relevant dissipation. So you do, you are in the limit of strong coupling here. Okay, this is sort of one. I should also mention the work by Andre Axel, Rob Schoenkopf, and Misha Lukin that sort of participated more like a consultant in these things. They have studied the single polar molecules that are trapped something like 100 nanometers above the surface. You can think about building traps for these things, to what extent they are consistent with that. Just the fact that an experimentalist, of course, is on a paper like this indicates maybe that this might even be realistic. The hope is at the end to sort of float single polar molecules above the surface for coupling these things to a straight line cavity here. These traps that one can construct, the typical frequencies that are roughly similar to what one knows in the case of an ion trap. So there's a lot of physics here, like in the case of ion traps, but of course ions I could never couple easily to a 10 gigahertz cavity. And another aspect that I just also want to mention on the side is this. Many of you know that the basis of, for example, when you talk about ion traps, has been that you can do laser cooling in the systems. Now, spontaneous emission is absent, as I said before, this rotation excitation microwave. But of course, there's a possibility by coupling a single polar molecule or an ensemble to a strip line cavity to sort of engineer by hand spontaneous emission. And then you can do a lot of things that we know from laser cooling, like cooling down to low temperatures in the vibrational excitations of the trap. You can sort of copy these things over and then repeat it here again. So this not only is interesting from the point of doing cavity QED, it also allows you to do new kind of cooling on the level of the side of the polar molecule. So molecular physicists actually are quite excited about these possibilities here. Let me now change topics a little bit, because this is another aspect that these polar molecules come in. It has nothing to do with what I said before, but I guess it's also interesting from this quantum computing point of view, so I want to say a few words about that. I mentioned before that in the case of atoms, we can do optical lattices. We can put single atoms per lattice size, and it's very clear that a few years down the road, people will do the same thing with these polar molecules. And then you can ask yourself, what can I do with polar molecules at an optical lattice? And interesting questions that come out in this context is that if you read papers, in particular again from the condensed matter community, like this paper here, there the idea was to make a 2D square lattice, but to make a very strange kind of a spin model where you got XX and ZZ interactions in these different spatial directions over here. This is the model which is written down here. And models like this have been discussed as a possible protected quantum memory. I'm not sure how practical these things are from an atomic physics point of view, because you have many other ideas how to do very good memory, but I find it very interesting by itself. So these are exotic spin models here. And of course, another one is these Hidayat models that are indicated here. You got the hexagonal lattice, and then you got the XX1YCC interaction here. And in these systems, there would be, for example, anions as excitations, fraction statistics, and all of these things come in. I'm very interested in these systems because I sort of see this as one of the futures in quantum optics. You know, in quantum optics, traditionally, what people have done in the past is this, that we have played with single atoms and single photons, cupping them together. I sort of see, I know, constructing sort of, you might call it virtual quantum materials, if I used the word from yesterday, you're sort of constructing virtual quantum materials that have very interesting excitations, like anions, the parastatistics and all of that. And at the end, hopefully we will learn, at least in the long way in the future, to play with these individual excitations. And of course, the holy grail and all of this thing will be topological quantum computing. But this is very far ahead, and I'm trying to understand these things at the moment, but I'm at the very beginning. But my claim is this, with these polar molecules, you know how to build these sort of virtual quantum materials in a very natural way. So it's not that you have to invoke 1,000 different lasers to do something that every experimentalist will throw you out of his lab. No, these things come out in a way that I actually do believe. Yeah? And as the third remark to these polar molecules, I would like to add something that I also find very interesting and that also leads to new physics here. Maybe also in relation to this microscopic physics I mentioned before. You know, when I talk about, for example, optical lattices, what I mentioned before is ideas that what one does in this context is that you impose from the laser from the outside a periodic array, and then you sort of store, for example, single molecules in there to build, for example, spin lattices, you know, with this virtual quantum materials and so on. But what's very interesting, of course, is that I can also just take polar molecules without any background or potential, maybe just a harmonic oscillator, and I can apply an external electric field and align these dipole moments, and I can easily make a 2D kind of a crystal. There, for example, these molecules would align in a sense here that, you know, they would all have dipole moments like this. They would sort of repel each other. If I switch off my dipole moments, you know, they would form a quantum gas, like a quantum degenerate Bose-Einstein condensate. If I switch on my dipole moment, at one point there will be a phase transition to a crystal. Yeah? And this is to some extent similar to the transition that we have from superfluid to Mott insulator, except that this is the first order transition. And what's very interesting is the following fact. Even if crystals appear, this is gamma, gamma potential energy divided by kinetic energy, when you compare the potential energy with the kinetic energy, in the case of, for example, polar molecules, you will find that due to the dipole-dipole crystals, you find there will be sort of a crystal form at very high densities. If you talk about ion traps, and you talk about the bigger crystals that are formed in this context, the corresponding bigger crystal will be formed at very low densities. So we have the possibility here of taking a quantum gas, compressing this thing, making a distance very small. It turns out that the distance is roughly something like maybe 100 nanometers between these molecules in this kind of crystal form, but then they lock into an array. And what's interesting is that if you have an array like this, if you want to use this array as, for example, quantum memory, then the collisional defacings are to a large degree eliminated. So these bigger crystals sort of offer a very interesting quantum information perspective in the third part of these things, but I'm not really talk about it. So there's this interesting quantum phase transition here that I'm actually quite excited about, and we have studied some of these things and we will publish this quite soon. Let me just make a remark here that if you compare these things with ion traps, in the case of an ion trap, you would have sort of ions that repel each other by Coulomb. Now you have sort of polar molecules that are aligned, and you have instead of one of R cubed here, you can again talk about phonon busts and all of these things, but the new feature is that you sort of can quantum melt, you know, this crystal and then get a DC out. And this leads to things that I can think about doing an exchange state, for example, to these polar molecules in a way that I could never do with an ion trap. So there's lots of new possibilities here And as I said, there's this way of maybe also avoiding collision defacing. We've worked out a lot on these things, but I will not talk about this here. Okay, so let me now tell you a little bit more technical details about this polymorphic solid state interface in the way that I've just explained before, this concept of the hybrid processor type idea by combining with electron samples, and I will just do these things very simple, 5 minutes, okay? So let me just go back and point out that when this Yale group does heavy QED, it's really quite amazing for me. Heavy frequency 10 gigahertz, heavy damping 0.01 megahertz is a possibility. So the damping of this polar mode is actually excellent. They have very strong coupling of the Cooper Bear box to the 30 megahertz coupling, but the defacing is really, so to say, not so great. And this is really where these polar molecules come in. And let me now show you a few, sort of make a few remarks in a more quantitative way from the atomic point of view. You know, the first thing that I might say as an atomic physicist is, well, okay, let me put in an ensemble, but let me take atoms, okay? The problem with atoms is, well, you can, of course, have bosons and condensate, and it's easy to float these things here above the surface, you know, given a certain distance, maybe a micrometer or 10 micrometers, actually, is not perfect, very easy. The problem is that if you want to couple to 10 gigahertz radiation, you don't want to go up to Rydberg states, and the corresponding coupling is only magnetic coupling, this is very big. So it's impossible with an ensemble of atoms to go into the limit of strong coupling here, or maybe just marginal. I think it's something worthwhile to be tried because these DCs are available very readily. But it's something that's sort of, you know, an idea which is not so great. In the case of polar molecules, these dipole excitations, the fact that this is an electric coupling here, this is very large. And so there's orders of many difference, and if I sort of start to put in numbers, it is very easy with an ensemble of polar molecules to go into this strong coupling limit where you couple the dipole moment in this excitation, this 10 gigahertz, to the split line cavity in a very strong way. Sort of as a few side remarks, I mean, time scales are compatible here, and there may be a problem here with laser light, but it's, as I said before, we can always move, for example, of samples of polar molecules, you can easily take the cloud and just move it somewhere else in order to read these things out. So you have sort of a combined toolbox available there. All of these things available on the solid state side, but on the other hand, you also have these things available on the side of atoms, like optical readout and so on. A few words about how in an atomic or here molecular ensemble one actually stores qubit. This is the ground state, so if you know, think of an ensemble of molecules, and then we call it one ground state G, and maybe another one here Q. This can be a spin qubit, for example, that I pointed out before. Now, there would be coupling here to this radio frequency and note the fact of scale of N enhancement that you get to these molecular ensembles. The ground state would be sort of like all atoms being in the state down here, and one excitation, the Fock state, would be the one where you have the symmetric excitation where one of these atoms or molecules is in the other spin state. And so, if you look at this atomic ensemble, you can write this as an N dagger, so that the single creation of an excitation on top of the vacuum here, which is the ground state over here, so this provides you a qubit, but essentially this is roughly a harmonic oscillator, so you must find a mechanism of sort of cutting off higher order excitations, and at the end this is done, of course, we produce some ideas like dipole blockade mechanisms, similar to Coulomb blockade, but the other option that we will do now in a minute is this, that we can also use a Cooper Bear box. Now, if you write on a very simple model, it's very simple-minded here, one has layer dissipation, all of these things, and I will not discuss these things here. It really comes down to a system like this. Here are, for example, two molecular ensembles written in this form, and these are harmonic oscillators. We couple this in a strong way, this is the coupling over here, to the mode that you have of your cavity, and then you have your Cooper Bear box in here, and so look at this thing like being, you want to drive maybe this Cooper Bear box in a very non-resonant way, so this thing becomes an effective nonlinearity that gives a nonlinearity that allows me to entangle the qubits from these molecular ensembles here. And sort of the basic idea that really comes down to this, that you can have, for example, in the Cooper Bear box, suppose that you have a superposition of 0 and 1 over there, you can swap these things over to the cavity, which is the bus, and then over to the molecular ensemble, and then if you want, maybe over then also to the optics. So we have done in detail the study of the fidelity of all of these processes and how to do the corresponding gates. And I guess I don't really want to say much more about these things here because some of these ideas of working out these gates are quite obvious and you have to do the hard work of working out all the decoherence. To be honest, we spent a long time understanding the decoherence of our quantum memory, you know, in this Riemann crystal phase and also in this in this gas space. There's a lot of collision physics involved. I guess you as a community are probably not interested in collisions in cold atomic quantum gases. It's pretty boring, but on the other hand, it's the work that has to be done. We have done it. I don't want to tell you about these things. I wanted to say a few more things about these spin models, these optical lattices, and how we engineer these, for example, Hidayev models. Actually, this thing is really cute, because if you give me a 2D lattice model and you give me any spin model, we have a way to sort of engineer the most general spin model with symmetric spin interactions. So you give me any spin model like this Hidayev stuff and so on, and you know how to do it. That's in a way that I believe even an experimentalist might not complain about. So I will not explain these things. If you're interested in this part, and there's also a preprint that we put in the archive some time ago, I can tell you about this thing. So let me stop here and thank you for your attention.
One of the dirt physics with the ion trapsin main kind of limit whether you can scale it up has been the patch potentials and the decoherence from the ions interacting with the leads. And you know, you may have the same, probably have the same problem here. Is your guess that it's going to be better or worse with the polar molecules if you have that kind of problem?
Well, of course, the patch potentials, you mean the patch potentials in the sense of heating up the ions?
Just basically they're, I guess, fluctuating E fields from something going on in the surface of the metal.
Yeah, but there's the following thing. First of all, in the case of an ion trap, of course, if you want to use the phonons as a data bus, the real concern is only that while you do a gate and you're putting your phonons into your phonon data bus, that you get decoherence at this level. We're not using this thing here. So, I mean, you know, we're coming here to microwave radiation, and so if this thing is hot or not, in principle, you know, I don't really care much about. I mean, I said before that we have been analyzing decoherence. You've been sort of analyzing decoherence from these, for example, molecular ensembles of having a quantum gas that, you know, sitting makes collisions, and these collisions are spin dependent, and we've analyzed that, and I'm quite optimistic about that.
But so sort of the only frequency that would matter would be the microwave coupling frequency.
That's right.
And we know experimentally that's pretty good.
Okay, let's
thank the speaker and all the speakers again.
So just before you rush out and check out, I just